been walking off the beaten path. Knowledge is power. It just is. And like, I talk about a lot of stuff on the track, just social issues and stuff like that. And so knowing allows you to walk forward. You know what I mean? It's like we're not walking forward blissfully unaware. It's like you're walking forward with knowledge and understanding. You know what I mean? And it's that there's freedom in that.
From the Bridge 90.9, I'm Jonathan Bender, and this is Mixtapes and Mixology, a podcast that mashes up the Kansas City music and cocktail scene. We take one track from a local artist and give it to a local bartender and ask them to make us a drink based on how the song makes them feel. Along the way, we dive into the world of that band, that bartender, and that cocktail. For today's episode, we paired Black Flannel's Keep Me Safe with Manifesto's Ryan Mabey. You can't listen, got some wisdom from my homies, hear the words, never twist them. So thanks for joining us in studio. I'm here with Morgan Cooper and then Denzel, D. Will. What do you like to go by?
Conductor Williams works.
Conductor Williams deal. Yeah. And the two together are known as Black Flannel, which is a collaboration and project that's been going on since 2014. Is that right?
Man, I guess it has, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
And so the two of you got together in the studio. It sounds kind of like a great story. Morgan, you're a cinematographer, and when you initially approached Conductor Williams, it was more about a video project, right?
Yeah. I hit D up on Twitter. No, it was for a short film that I wanted to do. We still got to do that, by the way. And so I just hit him up, and we grabbed lunch, and we instantly just clicked. And he's all about the art, and I've always been like that, too. Just, you know, I could tell right away the energies matched, but he didn't even know I rapped at the time. But we met up again at his studio, and he was just playing beats, and we were just trying to, like, catch vibes on this actual visual project, and he just kept playing beats, and he played the hands high beat. I'm pretty sure I was the one that was it, and I just started like kind of mumbling raps, like you always keep raps in your pocket, you know. I'd never recorded before, I've never had a recording experience, so it's just like a ton of raps saved, you know. And so he played that, and he was just like, spit that. So I was like, all right. So I just did it. And that day, like the very first take, I think we did hands high, and that started it. We weren't a group right away. Like, we didn't think about it. It was just like, let's just record some songs. Mm-hmm. You know, it was very organic. Hey yo, start the engine, calling out pretenders, try to dab me up, you fake, so I left you hanging, now I got your full attention, malice at the palace, when it's pacing verse piston, never held a pistol, but I clench your fist, to one hit you, in whole different leagues, why you know, he really helped mold me, and like find my sound, like on wax, which I'm really, really, really thankful that he had so much patience, and like, you know, I don't even know if there were like this barrel maker. I don't know if it would even be a thing if I hadn't met him.
Morgan Cooper grew up in Grandview, Missouri. As a middle schooler, he loved the puzzle of trying to find his voice with rap lyrics.
You know, loose leaf paper, you know, binders, journals, the back of homework, anywhere, you know. And it was more just because I love writing raps. I love, you know, expressing myself. But yeah, I never had any intention of sharing these and like performing these raps. It was just for me.
You were growing up in Grandview, you know, your dad was almost 50 when you were born, and you're riding the car listening to Miles Davis on the way to school.
You know, I still remember on the way to school every single day. My dad would binge listen to records. And so he'd play Miles, you know, for a week, you know, 2 weeks straight. The same record, and then he'd finally retire that for another one, and it would come back in circulation a couple months later or whatever. But you know, that was all I was really. I mean, I listened to hip hop, of course, in my own time. But you know, he wasn't. You know, he would, man, turn that off. You know what I mean? Like, you know, he was all about jazz. You know, old R&B. You know, the Marvins, Spinners, Bloodstones. You know, like that's what I listened to all the time, because that's what he listened to. Miles didn't play the fastest. He had to find his voice. That wasn't his style. He was more tonal. He was more melodic. To now, I mean, Miles is alleged, like incredible, because he found his voice. And so I think at a young age, it was definitely an eye-opening of like, man, you don't have to fit the norms. I don't know. I just feel like that always kind of stuck with me.
Cooper was surrounded by jazz growing up, on the ride to school and even at school, where he played drums in a jazz band. He sees those same influences, what he calls wholesome vibes, in Conductor Williams style.
You know, like when D's chopping something, he's chopping a record and, you know, he's throwing these breaks down, he's hand drumming all of it. You know what I mean? He's not hitting it and then, you know, dragging, you know, like overlapping each and then just boom, hitting a quantized button.
Quantization is where a producer will tweak the timing to make a recording exact. After being tweaked, the beats and vocals will each fall exactly on their prescribed beat.
And to make it, it's like, you know, it's swung. It's that swung sound that Dilla really, really championed.
So you mentioned Dilla. Dilla is James DeWitt Yancey, the producer out of Detroit. He worked with The Roots and then also A Tribe Called Quest. I'm curious, so on Black Flannel 2, it says for the imperfect, for the diligent. There's two L's in diligent. Is that for Dilla?
Yeah. You know, and also it's a play on a couple of things, because one, imperfect, you know, it's just like, that's our sound. Like when D and I work, we don't sit there and like overthink things forever. I've had to learn to just be like, yo, I'll rap, and it just is what it is. You know, you can do things a million times, you can overthink it. So that's the imperfect aspect of it. And then the diligent was a play on one Dilla, you know, just paying homage. And we left the two L's, and everybody thinks we just don't know how to spell. But no, that was very intentional, and that was one of the reasons why. So that's really cool you caught that.
For what James did for the drum machine is like kind of what Coltrane would do for brass. For me, Dilla's really important because the music was his, you know, that was his kind of his heartbeat. I find myself like asking God the same question of like, why is this fire the same every day? Like, I make music every day for hours on end, every single day, and it just never goes away. And I have friends that are other artists or painters or whatever, and that the fire dies, you know, they need a vacation, they gotta get away, and I just never have that. And so I look at guys like Dilla and Madlib, and they seem, for what I can see, to have that same deal. So I almost feel like a likeliness to them, you know. It's like, okay, there's people out there that feel the same way as I do, and they never get tired of looking for records, and they never spend too much money on records, and they are always in their basement or their studio. So that's why Dilla like means so much to me as a producer.
It was just about the music, you know, and creating honestly, like that's what they liked and that's what they did, you know, the Mad Libs, you know, the Dillas, the Dooms. And so that was one of the reasons I started writing, is just because I was like, you know what, I'm never gonna be like Camera. You know what I mean? I'm that's not who I am, and that's okay.
So yeah. For the two of you together, hiphoptitans.com said that you were into culture building. That was the reason that you existed, what you'd set your sights on. Do you feel like that's an accurate description of what you're trying to do?
Definitely. Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it's all about. Like, hip hop is a culture, and you know, I'm really thankful for the fact that I'm able to just, you know, create without pressure, you know, in this medium. I can just write what I want. I could rap about what I want, and it's, you know, so it's like, beyond that is just making any impact we can. You know what I mean? If someone, there's no better feeling than when someone hears it and they can honestly say, yeah, it resonated with me. That made me think, you know what I mean? That, you know, that's just such an incredible feeling and a blessing, so.
While seeking to impact the culture around them, both men are quick to point to the culture of collaboration that defines their duo.
The part of the process that people miss is that the beats that are created are just skeletons at first. It might be the sample and a kick, or the sample and a snare, and then he'll write to that. Then once I figure out what he is doing, then the production starts. So now a song like Guns Up, the dogs barking and that like atmospheric sound, that gets added after I know that these two verses are like super heavy. Guns Up, I had in my head to be like a rah-rah rally, like, you know, talk crap type of joint. He heard it and put knowledge on it. So now I gotta like change my brain and, you know, So that's really how Black Flannel works, is it's a true collaboration of trust. Like, he gives it to me and says, all right, do whatever you're going to do.
So on Keep Me Safe, I've heard you say in the past that that song came together on a good day.
Yeah, and I woke up and everything was just awesome that day, man. I was really, really thankful for life and music that day. Like, I wanted to hear good music, so I just went in to my little studio room and I put a record on and I was just enjoying the music, man. I would liken it to, for all the smokers, I would liken it to that type of moment where you're smoking and then you're listening to music. It's like, yo, this is crazy. But I was just alive.
And that's every part of you was in it.
Yeah, and that's what made me so emotional and thankful that day. It was because it wasn't enhanced by anything. I just woke up and I was feeling great, and I was just very, very thankful. And I caught those horns, and then I caught the bass line, and made it. And then we had a show that night in Lawrence, and on the way up there, I let him hear it, and that was that. He wrote the raps.
Conductor and like his beats, just conductor in general, like, you know, if he's like, yeah, I got a batch of beats, it's like Christmas, you know what I mean? It's like Christmas, but it's like kind of the eclectic Christmas with like different types of family members, and it's like a white elephant, so you don't know when you open the gift what you're gonna hear. You know it's gonna be dope and you know you're gonna love it, but you just don't know what you're gonna get. And that was the perfect example of that.
But yeah, as soon as I chopped that joint, I knew that it was gonna be a joint. Like, I knew it was going to be one of my favorite joints and one of our best records. Just the feel of it, just a super Brazilian jazz like feel.
So for somebody who's never heard Keep Me Safe, for you, what's the core of that song?
Hope, moving forward.
Yep.
Like literally walking, like walking forward in like a storm.
Yep.
With your head up, with your head held high.
You know, just the chorus on that song alone is a mantra to that style of thought, you know? It's like, free at last, you know? Free at last. Like, that's the one of the main, like, punch lines on the chorus is that. And I'm glad that he wrote it that way, because that mantra feel is what that track needed.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And going off what Conductor said, I mean, like, you know, I've all, knowledge is power. It just is. And like, I love history. You know, I love history and I've learned. And I talk about a lot of stuff on the track, just social issues and stuff like that. And so knowing allows you to walk forward. You know what I mean? It's like, we're not walking forward blissfully unaware. It's like you're walking forward with knowledge and understanding. You know what I mean? And it's that, there's freedom in that. You know, there's so much craziness in the world. I mean, we were just talking about the shootings that have been, you know, with the police in Minnesota, and then the one at that gas station.
We sat down for this interview shortly after an officer shot and killed Philando Castile in Minnesota.
That's hard, you know what I mean? That's a tough, it's just constant, you know? It's like, you know, and it's overwhelming and it's painful, you know what I mean? But like, even though we're still gonna walk, you know, we're still gonna march forward.
Yeah, and there's still choice in the matter, you know. You can still decide to be positive.
Well, to me, that was one of the most powerful juxtapositions in the song. I mean, I do a lot of things at my job. Spitting back raps to an MC wasn't on the list, but I mean, in the beginning of the song, you talk about the idea of sitting at a stop sign, questioning your vision, hearing voices telling you to stop. You can't listen. And there, that's that optimism, that hope, that driving forward. And then later in the song, you kind of come back to that idea of you're stopped, only this time it's a police stop. And you had that conversation with my pop, keep my hand on the steering wheel, stay strong. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the same situation,
yeah,
but two really different perspectives. It really powerful, part, I mean, having to comment on what's currently going on in America in relation to race and police shootings in particular, that's a real challenge to do, and to do it in an artful way. I mean, for you, was it important to place those two things in one song?
It's a story, I'm telling you, a very real story. I mean, that was a conversation that I had with my dad when I was 7. I'll never forget it. We were pulling into our apartment at Oak Tree Square, and he got pulled over, and he came over. his police did, and he just had his gun around his hand, and he's looking, and you know, my sister's crying, my sister Chloe's in the car, and she's just bawling, and you know, so the officer's already on high alert, and my dad's just like a statue, you know, and he calls in two more police officers, and my dad's like, you know, he's just a normal man, you know, but like he called for backup, and it was just this big old thing, and he searched the car, we had to get out the car, it was just, you know, so that night I asked him, just like, what happened, like why was that, you know, and that's when we had the talk. And I think most like, I mean, I know Denzel, you've gotten the same talk from your dad. It's mm-hmm. just reality. You know, he's like, son, be a statue. That's all he said. He's like, if you're around a police officer, be a statue because they fear you. You know, they're fearful of us. I asked him, like, why are they fearful of us? And he's because it's America. It's how it's always been. And that, I'll never forget that conversation. I remember like it was yesterday. And so with this song in particular, it's taking that knowledge and understanding of the condition that we live in. And like Denzel said, choosing to move forward with our head held high, proud of who I am. So I'm not a threat to anyone. I'm gonna walk in knowledge and understanding who I am and secure in who I am and continue to, you know, pursue a happy life.
No, I mean, that's a choice, man. And we wrote this song, man, that's so long ago. It's like maybe a year ago now.
Yeah.
So this has always been, you know, it's kind of, I'm one of those deals. I'm pretty sure on the next record we'll have something else. It's like these tidbits into the heart of what Black culture is and Black America is.
And is the hope that you don't have to keep writing these songs, or do you recognize that based on where we are and where we're going, there'll always be some version of this or something to deal with?
Yeah, we gonna have to continue to write these songs. I heard Pete Rock on his Instagram today. He posted the Fight the Power joint. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. If that ain't 2016 today, like I don't even know. And that's what the same question you just posed. If you posed that in 89, 90, they would say, "Nah, we gotta keep making them." Because, and now it's 2016, so I'm gonna say we gotta keep making these style of joints.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, I mean, I wish I didn't have to write songs about being, you know, in these situations where I could lose my life if I move an inch, you know what I mean, at a police stop. But it's real, and I'm going to continue to write about the things that are real to me and real to Denzel and real to people that look like me, because we deserve to have a voice, you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, I wish I could write about all rainbows and sunshines and like, you know, yeah, it's like everything, you know, it's like everything's okay and peace. And but it's like, it's just not like that, you know, in this day and age.
That doesn't mean you have to be defeated by it.
Exactly. Exactly. It's important to keep the conversation, the dialogue going and not just bury our heads in the sand and pretend it's not happening. You know, I mean, this is a reality and it's a crazy world, but we have to continue to attack these subjects head on.
It also seems like the kind of conversation I really want to have over a drink.
Mm. Yeah.
I need a beer right now.
Yeah.
So for you, I guess when the idea of turning Keep Me Safe into a cocktail, where'd your head go, or what'd you think of that idea?
I would, any drink, especially cocktail, I would think like refreshing for the beat choice, for the palette of the song. I wouldn't think like a heavier style of drink.
Something refreshing might be nice. You know, something with a lemon, if you will, you know what I mean? Something with bright, you know, gold tones. I always think of the color gold.
Yeah.
You know, when I hear those horns, I think of brass, you know what I mean? I just think of all those tones. So Templeton's kind of got the golden tones happening. And then, you know, he was talking about something refreshing.
Black Flannel recorded a live version of Keep Me Safe at the Bridge earlier this year. Let's take a listen to the track they laid down during that 8160 session.
Life
This next one is called Keep Me Safe.
Keep me safe, keep me safe, keep me safe, keep me safe.
hopping, walking off the beaten path. Feet bleeding, heart beating fast. Mind thinking free at last.
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 Heart beating fast, thinking free at last. Hopping, walking off the beaten path. Feet bleeding, heart beating fast. Mind thinking free at last.
Free at last.
Free at last,
free at last,
free at last,
free at last.
Heart beating fast, think it free at last. I brace yourself for something real, something different, something for the culture. Give them something uplifting when you young and gifted. And you value independence, set goals, future looking bright, feel the premonition. But I understand crossroads, dreams in the distance. You sitting at a stop sign, questioning your vision, hearing voices telling you to stop. You can't listen, got some wisdom from my homies. Hear the words, never twist them, and I wrestle with my thoughts. So I'm jumping off the
top rope,
wanna keep me out, but I push into the
lock, bro.
Top gun, I ain't talking about clock smoke, talking about bars so vivid they thinking Pac wrote. All habits die, so I tell myself, focus on the man I wanna be. Swimming with this current called life, going up the stream, blowing up the scene. Thought I told him no, stopping, not an option, living dreams. Cause I
give me fame.
I've been walking off the beaten path, feet bleeding, heart beating fast. Mind thinking free at last.
Free at last.
Free at last,
free at last,
free at last,
free at last.
Heart beating fast, thinking free at last. I've been walking off the beaten path, feet bleeding, heart beating fast. Mind thinking free at last,
free at last.
Free at last,
free at last,
free at last,
free at last.
Heart beating fast, thinking free at last. I stay away from parts of town with lots of cops around. Not because I'm doing dirt, cause they think it's shooting me first. Loud-ish, lay me on the ground-ish. Switching off they body cam, let them bleed foul-ish. Had that conversation with my pop early on. Told me keep my hand up on that steering wheel, stay strong. Got a couple questions on my mind, I need some answers. Like, are they disappointed? You expecting someone dancing, making moves, no permission. Wasn't born with advantage. They talking about some ish they never did, so outlandish. I don't like the hype, always been the type to go and prove it. Celebration short-lived, focus, so I show improvement. D says style, style. I figured I would do it, then before we knew it, had a problem on our hands, I ruined everything. Best man who lost the wedding ring. No redemption for the maker. Thankfully I'm self-dependent. Anything you lost in the mix, well that's incidental. But I'm free, no chains on my mental. No chains on my crown. Big things, nothing little, big things. Got hope, uplifting everything. Praying.
There's a speakeasy in the basement and the soul of a resurrected whiskey brand at 1924 Main Street. But 17 years ago, before Manifesto and the Rieger, there was 21-year-old Ryan Mabee, a bartender's apprentice, trying to make his way at Pierpont's in the newly reopened Union Station.
I was a little overconfident. I think I was a bit cocky and you know, trying to be this hotshot bartender, but I was humbled right away by the guys that I worked with, because they were true pros. They had been doing it for a long time, and it literally changed my life. It literally set me on the path to owning my own bar one day and pursuing bartending as a career. At the time, I was just paying my way through college, and I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but it didn't take me very long to figure out just how much I loved being a bartender and how much I loved the industry, and realized that this is what I wanted to do. So I would say that it was quite life-changing, actually.
What were the aspects that you love or really drew you to this lifestyle?
Well, I think, you know, aside from the natural need to provide hospitality that most of us have in some capacity, aside from that, there was a real sense of creativity.
Maybee is one of Kansas City's most recognizable mixologists. He's got a coterie of tattoos and a penchant for wearing hats. Everything from fedoras to pageboy caps. On a recent Monday, Mabee is behind the bar at the Rieger, the Main Street restaurant he co-owns with Chef Howard Hanna, a few hours before happy hour. The conversation turns to the first place he opened, JP Wine Bar, where Tannin Wine Bar and Kitchen is now, debuted in 2006.
It was a very novel idea. In fact, I took a lot of inspiration from some bars that I had visited in Chicago at the time. The concept was very focused on wine flights, and instead of just selecting a single wine, you would select a flight of wines and get to experience, you know, three or four wines that were similar, whether it's from the same geographical region or maybe the same varietal from different parts of the world. But then also from behind the bar, I made it sort of an internal rule that all of our cocktails had to use wine of some sort. So that forced us into experimenting with products like sherry and port and champagne and other styles of wine instead of just the standard wines that we're used to. So it was we were definitely way ahead of the cocktail curve at that time. And the more I focused on that, the more I got, I just kind of really went deeper down the rabbit hole, which led to Manifesto.
And so for you, is that your wine period? You know how artists have like blue periods or other things where you
can
say...
That was my wine period, yeah, absolutely. And I always joke with people that like I met back at JP Wine Bar because I was, you know, sommelier and like completely 100% focused on wine, and then Manifesto is like all booze. And the people that I met at JP Wine Bar are like, you know, you used to be all into wine, now it's all spirits and cocktails. I'm like, yeah, you know, wine is a gateway drug. It leads to the harder stuff.
The harder stuff is behind the bar at Manifesto. The speakeasy that sits in dusky light below the Rieger. But the swank, intimate scratch bar wasn't swank or intimate 7 years ago.
Yeah, so they had a little bar down there. It was really non-functional. And they actually had a little stage in the corner that was intended to have live music. But the first time that I went down there, when I was looking for a place to open Manifesto, I walked down the stairs and it was like 10 o'clock at night or something, and this is supposed to be a bar, but one of their employees was laying on the couch with a blanket watching SportsCenter.
Wow.
And so I'm like, okay, yeah, you need some help here.
Right.
Now, I think their original intent was for me to just take over the bar as it was, but I'm like, it's not gonna work for what I have in mind. And Manifesto is a very, very specific, very bold concept.
Maybe found inspiration in his travels at craft cocktail meccas like Milk and Honey and PDT in New York City. He wanted a small, intimate bar, a place where they could fail and succeed, what he calls a craft cocktail case study.
Well, it gets classified often as a speakeasy, which is a little bit misleading, but in reality, it does kind of give you that sense of excitement and anticipation and anxiety when you're entering, because we're tucked away in the basement of a 100-year-old building. The entrance is in the back. That you enter through an alley. You can make a reservation by sending a text message. So there's, there's a little bit of intrigue to the whole process if you're doing it for the first time.
Manifesto opened in 2009. 1924 Main, the restaurant above, closed a year later, and the idea for the Rieger was born then.
You know, this building is gorgeous. It's got such a great story to tell, such a great history, and it's in such an important part of downtown Kansas City. I really thought that there was an opportunity to create something special. So I knew that I wanted the restaurant. I immediately went to the landlord and made a pitch to take it over, partnered with Howard Hanna. That's when he and I first met and realized that we had very similar goals and visions for the restaurant, you know.
Is there an element to where having the culinary side kind of back in-house, it allows you to experiment and drive each other? And
yeah, and I think that's really important that the front of the house, the bartenders work with the kitchen as well, and work with the chefs, because we can learn a lot from each other. We often share ingredients or share ideas or books, or if one of the cooks is working on something, and a bartender catches wind of it and say, hey, I wonder how I can use this knowledge or this ingredient to make a cool drink or to make our bar program better.
The Rieger not only inspired the cocktail menu at Manifesto, it also provided an inspiration for a number of the bottles behind the bar.
And then since you weren't busy enough, but were here in the Rieger surrounded by memorabilia and memories of kind of a brand gone but still here, you go and launch a distillery.
Yeah, why not? Well, I didn't know about the history of J. Rieger & Co. until I started working on opening the Rieger, and that's when I discovered the history dating back to 1887 and the J. Rieger & Company whiskey brand, and I was just completely enthralled and obsessed with the idea of resurrecting it. We're talking about a company that was as big as Boulevard Brewing Company back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, that died because of Prohibition. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some real romance just in the idea of resurrecting a company like that, bringing it back from the ashes. You know, at the time, there was not a single distillery in Kansas City, Missouri. So, you know, J. Rieger & Co. was the last, and now once again, we're the first.
And to have something like a Kansas City whiskey, to invent an entirely new style, can you talk a bit about how that came about?
That, you know, coming up with our Kansas City whiskey was really an adventure. It didn't start out that was not the plan, but that's where we ended up, and I'm really glad that we did. Somehow along the way, we discovered some historical elements to American whiskey, and were able to bring back a style that existed in the 1800s that is completely lost today, again due to Prohibition, and we're the first to bring it back, and because of that we were able to call it Kansas City whiskey.
So there, when you talk about that, can you talk a bit about the actual ingredient base, you know, your grain bill?
Well, it's a blended whiskey, which means that we're using finished whiskeys, aged whiskeys, and blending them together. It's a blend of three different whiskeys, actually. We have a bourbon that's a minimum, that's 4 years old. We have a five-year-old rye that we blend in, and we have a nine-year-old corn whiskey. So we have these three different whiskeys that we blend together. And then the final component, the most important component to Kansas City whiskey is the sherry, which we blend in 15-year-old Oloroso sherry, and that was a practice that was common back in the 1880s. Today, nobody does it, and we're the only one. So that's really what makes Kansas City whiskey, Kansas City whiskey, is that sherry.
Do you feel like that's a bit of things coming full circle, so you can now claim that your wine influence and your spirits influence are finally married?
Well, I always felt like it was married. It was some other people kind of went, huh, you know, that's weird, but it's always, I think everything kind of ebbs and flows and comes full circle. You know, it started out as a love for bartending, right? And then that it kind of evolved into a passion for wine. And I dug as far and as deep as I could on that. And then camp kind of went back to spirits and cocktails. And now with J. Rieger & Co., they're literally married together in one bottle. So it's a little bit ironic.
For you, I guess, I gave you the song by Black Flannel called Keep Me Safe.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what you thought of when you were listening to it, or if you fired it up?
Sure, yeah. The first thing that I thought of when I listened to it was it immediately sounded like, just had this cool groove, like just reminded me of summertime. I thought the timing was great. You know, it had this light, airy kind of groove to it that was just chill. I loved it. But then the more you listen to it and listen to the lyrics and everything, it's pretty deep, pretty thoughtful, and there's a lot more going on, you know. And I really like that contrast to it. I thought it was really cool. It gave me some good inspiration for a drink. The second refrain of the song, the chorus is "Keep me safe," but then the refrain is "Free at last." So I thought I would complement the title of the song by using that and call the drink "Free at Last."
Where did you start when you were thinking about the cocktail?
Well, you know, kind of going back to the way it made me think about summer, my favorite drink in the summertime is a daiquiri. And a good daiquiri, should be strong and bracing and slightly tart, but still really refreshing. And that's that kind of contrast I also kind of saw in the song, and that's why it made me think of the daiquiri. So sort of wanted to take a cue from the Hemingway daiquiri, do something a little bit less sweet. So instead of rum, I'm using gin, J. Rieger & Company gin. I'm also adding some falernum in, which is a classic liqueur from Barbados, which consists of lime, almond, clove, and ginger. And then complementing those two with lime juice and grapefruit juice. So the result should be, you know, relatively similar to like a Hemingway daiquiri, but gin instead of rum, and a little bit different spice blend. But again, really bold, very strong, and still super refreshing. So a good summertime refreshing cocktail.
So there you have a little bit of tart and sweetness from what you told me. I could see how there's also got to be some balance, because it's a good amount of acid that you're putting in that drink.
Quite a bit, yeah. And you can also adjust the sweetness. I mean, if it were, say, too acidic or too tart for somebody, you could add a little bit of simple syrup, and that's not gonna hurt it.
And so, start to finish, if I'm having this drink, you know, what do you want me to experience over the course of drinking a Free at Last?
Well, I think initially you're going to look at it and think of it, if you're thinking in terms of, oh, it's like a daiquiri, you're like, oh, frou-frou-y, summer light, fun. But there's way more going on than that. It's way more complex and profound and deep than what it appears to be on the surface.
That's it for this week's episode. But tune in next week when we paired Yes You Are's HGX with Jack's Fish House's Kenny Coors to make one track and one cocktail for Mixtapes and Mixology. Mixtapes and Mixology is produced by Sarah Bradshaw, Dan Calderon, Jonathan Bender, and Kirsten McCudden. This is a production of The Bridge and Flatland, KCPT's digital magazine, in collaboration with Recommended Daily. For other episodes, video interviews, and cocktail recipes, go to bridge909.org or follow us at #MakeMeAMix. But I understand crossroads, dreams in the distance, see you sitting at a stop sign, questioning your vision.